In his book, Resource Rulers, Bill Gallagher points out the key to Canada's economic future is in the hands of Indigenous organizations and individuals. He goes on to say, opportunities are boundless for anyone who chooses to engage with First Nations business people, community leaders, and governments. Now, like all business relationships, the dynamics and the particulars of how to succeed are wrapped up in the intricate web of human relationships. Relationships that take into account culture, rules, and regulations, and the meeting of minds in the pursuit of a common objective. We are on new ground in Canada. Moving forward, First Nations and non-Indigenous organizations will be working together to develop resources and capitalize on opportunities in a manner that will bring employment, revenue, and prosperity to territories that have languished in poverty under the Indian Act. How then do you move forward? What are the business and cultural first through 100 steps that need to be realized to ensure success? These are questions being asked by everyone in business, be they First Nations or not. We invited Mark Selman, the founding director of the Executive MBA program in Indigenous Business and Leadership at Beattie School of Business, to join us for a conversation that matters about the wealth of potential in doing business as or with Indigenous organizations and individuals.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the following and viewers like you. Please become a patron at conversationsthatmatter.tv.
Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Stuart. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're at an interesting time as we continue to attempt, and I use the word attempt on purpose, to move forward towards reconciliation and to be able to create opportunities that allow Indigenous and First Nations citizens and members of the Canadian landscape as a whole into business opportunities. And you're playing an important role in that. You've got an MBA program that helps Indigenous leaders, business leaders, and so on, to start to navigate a path towards inclusion. Tell me a little bit about this program.
Certainly. Well, I appreciate the way you've described the program. I would just add to that that it also includes leaders who are not Indigenous themselves,
yes,
but who are interested in Indigenous issues and Indigenous communities and their well-being. So that's an important aspect to the program. It's not a program only for Indigenous people.
No, I remember that Pam Goldsmith-Jones actually was in the program, I think, while she was still mayor of West Vancouver, wasn't it? Or just after
just
her term
after,
there,
I
yeah.
think, yes.
Yeah.
But before she was a member
an MP,
of Parliament.
Yeah.
Yes. The program. Well, the program is a lot like any other executive MBA. Executive meaning that it's designed for people who are already in leadership or management roles, and that it's applied rather than being theoretical mm-hmm. in its focus. So the students who come to it are coming to improve their practice as administrators or business people, or in some cases managers of nonprofit organizations or would-be managers.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that kind of a flavor to it, or that kind of a focus. And it has only a couple of courses that you would look at and say, whoa, that's different. So it has a course in, it's called Philosophy of Management, but it focuses on how to work with Indigenous ways of knowing and Western business knowledge when they are encountering each other in the
mm-hmm.
world. And then there's a course on Indigenous law and how that can be used in terms of economic development and other things that Indigenous nations are undertaking.
Well, those are two very important components,
yes,
especially when we take a look at the way that the law has treated Indigenous rights and the way that we've seen courts over the last 30 or 40 years tend to rule in favor of Indigenous rights But then the application of that law seems to be something that's quite different.
Right. So, I mean, the law, a lot of indigenous leaders, of course, are real experts in the law. They've become experts.
Out of necessity.
Out of necessity. And yeah. Law has been a career of choice for many indigenous leaders, quite understandably. But in this case, the focus is not so much on understanding Canadian law as it applies to Indigenous people, so much as it is on the revival of Indigenous laws and practices as part of the renewal of Native nations. So much of the research that's been done, and unfortunately in Canada, most of it is not done here, but and is a bit secondhand, but most of the research shows that nations that are successful economically and in terms of addressing the needs of their community members are ones that pay attention to their traditional ways of making decisions, traditional governance, at least that the governance fits with the fundamental ways of looking at the world that the nation has.
So why is that a key element in the success of a particular nation, that they pay attention to that?
Well, I think part of it is sort of psychological wholeness, that a nation that feels like it's making decisions in a good way is likely to make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reinforcing who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas nations that are operating entirely by decision-making processes that have been imposed on them, as is the case for most nations in BC, don't feel good about themselves. They don't feel comfortable. Well, just to further explain that, I've sat in a number of different council meetings mm-hmm. in First Nations, and most of them operate according to Robert's Rules of Order.
Which is not...
Not an
natural
way of making decisions.
Their normal governance.
But if you watch the decision making going on, if you get to a point in those meetings where the decision path seems to be controversial and unsettled, not everybody is on board with it, then people kind of back away from the decision and table the motion or whatever, because they're still... they've retained, in most cases, a commitment to consensus-based decision-making because mm-hmm. that's the way things were done. And so that type of decision-making seems to be more comfortable and people have more confidence in it, even when they've adopted some of the Western trappings of non-consensus-based decision-making.
Got to get you to hang on for a second while we take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Conversations That Matter is brought to you by Odlum Brown, a client-focused investment firm that starts client relationships with straightforward conversations focused on you, your aspirations, and your investment priorities. Odlum Brown has been a supporter of Conversations That Matter from the day we started this show. Their only condition was that we provide a non-biased conversation with people from all sides of all sorts of issues. And of course, we couldn't produce this show without the support of Oh Boy Productions. If you're looking to produce a show like this one, I suggest you reach out to Oh Boy. They can help you produce it, and they can help you build your audience. And we also need your support. I ask you to please pledge $1 per show by going to conversationsthatmatter.tv/donate, because those dollars add up and play an important role in helping us produce this show. Now, back to the show. I think the key word that you just said there is having confidence, and not only in the decision, but in the process, and as you say, stepping it back a couple steps, confidence in oneself.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have that confidence in yourself, you're making decisions that you're uncertain about.
Yeah.
And so people, anybody who has kind of looked from a great distance away at the situation that First Nations find themselves in Canada, say, well, come on, just get on with it, as though somehow their reality is equal to that of somebody who has come of age, grown up in a First Nations community, when that isn't the case. I've witnessed firsthand that, you know, you see people who have... been robbed of the resources that they need to be able to make those confident decisions. And when you talk about this, going back to this point, I think it is a fundamental point. It seems basic, but it's way more than that.
Yes. I think they're get on with it. Why can't people just put it behind them and get on with it? There's a lot that's wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it involves almost complete failure to recognize what's been done to people in the past.
Right.
But more seriously, in my view, it involves a failure to recognize the ways in which Indigenous people now are still kept from achieving what they could achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us back kind of to the program.
Yes.
So at Simon Fraser University, we had very, very few Indigenous applicants for our MBA program. We had the oldest MBA program in Canada, executive MBA program. It was well recognized. People admired it. And we had maybe a handful of Indigenous people over the 25 years or so that it had existed.
Mm-hmm.
So we were doing something that was keeping people from coming and taking advantage of the program. And when we did have people come to the program, we had some succeed, but we had some bright people not succeed in the program. And so I knew there was something wrong there.
And were you able to identify what that was?
Well, I think we weren't sending any signal that we were paying attention to Indigenous leadership
mm-hmm.
or the issues that mattered the most to Indigenous leaders, or that we would accept people in. So our undergraduate business program is very hard to get into on the basis of grades. You
yes.
need to get very good grades to get into the program. And sadly, with the state of education in BC, we don't have many Indigenous people who are getting those grades.
Right.
And
For a whole bunch of reasons. Yeah.
And then added to that is the fact that until maybe 10 or 15 years ago, not that many Indigenous leaders thought about business as something that they would focus on. They thought about law, they thought about medicine, they thought about other areas in preference education,
mm-hmm.
Because those were critical issues facing the nations. But now business is a critical issue facing
yes.
the nation. Even if you're not a business person, if you're going to be a leader in an Indigenous nation, the
mm-hmm.
chances are you're going to be making business decisions.
Yes.
And so, anyway, the combination of those two things were keeping people away. So what I realized was that we needed to have a program that actually addressed some of the issues that are important to Indigenous leaders.
Yes.
And even more importantly, said, welcome. We would be pleased to have Indigenous people come and take programs in
mm-hmm.
our business school, which we had never really said. So that was important.
And it's working.
And it's working, yes. It's, you know, a relatively small number of people still who are leaders who can get access to the resources to be able to do the program, because the program costs the same as any other executive MBA program at our university, and wants to be in business,
mm-hmm.
But it is making a big, big difference. So we have close to 100 graduates now, and those people are kind of networked with each other, and I'm just stunned at how often when I connect with a Indigenous organization that I haven't had dealings with before, there's some connection to somebody in our program. Or if I'm talking to a mining company
wow.
and they've got operations across the country and they're concerned about how they relate to the different nations in different places, there's somebody I can phone up who
mm-hmm.
knows that nation.
So. Yeah, so there's a tendency to think, oh, okay, well then somebody who isn't an Indigenous business person would go through this program, and yes, there would be tremendous value that they would get for either running businesses that are owned and run by that particular nation, or when they're working with, you know, on their own enterprises. But it's important to realize that anybody who wants to do business with First Nations entities will benefit from this program, because then they'll start to understand the cultural sensitivities and the legal sensitivities that are associated with any kind of negotiation.
Well, and that's to focus on some of the key knowledge that comes from the front of the classroom, hopefully, when we're doing things right.
Yes.
But even more so, like most other MBAs, the biggest benefit, or at least as big a benefit as what you learn from the front of the classroom, is the network that you build with other people in the class. And so the huge opportunity for someone who's not Indigenous but wanting to work with Indigenous people who comes to that program is that they develop a network of Indigenous leaders from across the country instantly.
Yeah.
Or over a three-year period where they work on projects together, they are in each other's homes, they have dinner together. So it's a level of connection that would be hard for many non-Indigenous people to get.
So if we want to close that gap between First Nations and the rest of BC and Canadian society, we have to create opportunity. And business, as Clarence Louis points out, is one of those very important venues.
Yes, and there are people like Clarence Louis who are just remarkable themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't really need an MBA program to be successful.
Right.
And he was fortunate to link up with some very good partners, and he's got a very good administrator for their company. So, but most people need a lot more help than that, whether they're Indigenous or non-Indigenous, if they're going to be successful in business. And yes, we are moving to a time, and we're also moving to a different time when it's harder for anybody to get ahead without the credentials and everything. We just, as a society, we expect people to have qualifications for everything in a way that we didn't, especially in the North.
I want to come back to, though, the point that if you are non-Indigenous and you're working in a sector where you want to do work that is going to touch upon Indigenous communities, you have to understand all of this. And so your program has great benefit to anybody, especially post-Sokoteen. And I don't know that a lot of people appreciate how important it is that it's not just consultation, but it's consent and cooperation and partnership. And there has to be this. And without it, and if you don't know how to get to that point, you're going to face some really significant challenges.
Yes. I mean, you started out by saying we're at an interesting time, a challenging time in terms of reconciliation, and that couldn't be more true. So many companies are only just beginning to learn that they know that Indigenous relations are important. How important is yet to be determined? You know, that maybe it's not as important as safety to them at this point, but it's getting there. Or sustainability, say, environmental performance.
Yeah.
So Indigenous relations are catching up fast to that, but only the best companies are doing it reasonably well.
Yeah.
And even they, I'm sure, would agree with me that they have a lot to learn. And part of it is learning about what makes Indigenous communities successful, because you want to have a successful partnership where the resource company, if it's a resource company, and the nation are both successful and their joint ventures are successful. And so in order to make that all work, you have to understand something about governance and how important good governance is to Indigenous nations and what good governance means in Indigenous terms, which is in part to reflect the way that people in the community want decisions to be made. And that is something that is borne out quite clearly in the research and yet is not understood by, I would say, the vast majority of policymakers in the government and in businesses. And that's another stage of reconciliation that we have yet to grapple with very fully, I think.
Well, last point before we have to wrap up, and it's one that I think is fundamentally important, that whenever doing business with First Nations, respect and an appreciation for the fact that the person across the table from you may see the world differently than you do, and that you have to work towards finding that common goal, is fundamentally important. Because if you don't do that, you're going to wind up in a conflict that is, you know, avoidable. If only you had taken the time to respect someone else's perspective and way of life.
Well, and probably the most frequent mistake made by people who are essentially well-intentioned about wanting to develop a relationship but don't understand what they're doing well enough yet is to think that you can have respect for Indigenous peoples generally, and you can understand that there were residential schools across Canada, and you've kind of done your job then by recognizing that.
Uh-huh.
But of course, any Indigenous person who's doing business with you wants to be recognized as being Tahltan or being Blood or or being whatever they are.
Yes.
Because they don't think of themselves as, oh, I'm an Indigenous person. They think of themselves as Coast Salish or whatever they are.
Right.
So, so recognition in that sense is to recognize somebody for who they are, what nation they come from, what clan they come from, that you've taken the time to learn about the community, what they hope for, what they want. And if you don't have the time to take to invest in that relationship to that level where you've got some general understanding, then you are being disrespectful.
Well, and also that person as an individual.
Yes, that person as an
individual. They are all of the members of all those different communities, and they're also an individual.
Yeah. But there was one thing I did want to add, because I think it's really important to this. So we started this program 6 or 7 years ago at the Beattie School, you know, actively seeking Indigenous students to come and take our EMBA. And it was a big thing to swallow. Many faculty members, I'm sure, thought it was crazy. And many students in the other programs saw it as totally irrelevant to their interests.
Yeah.
But having Indigenous students in the business school at a graduate level has transformed the culture of that business school. And now almost all of the MBA programs, both the executive MBA programs and the regular MBA programs, include a course that focuses on the relationship between business and Indigenous peoples, and people are learning.
Yes.
So to go back to the opening, we are in complicated times for reconciliation, and every day you can look in the newspaper and see gaps and failures to understand across the differences between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people. But at the same time, it doesn't take that much to start to change a culture. And I think organizations can make a lot of progress if they are willing to take those steps to make sure that they include Indigenous people, that they have some Indigenous employees, and that those employees are celebrated for being Indigenous as opposed to that being ignored.
And when we do, we all benefit. Everybody benefits.
We all benefit, yes. We have a lot to learn. And the cultures and decision-making patterns that Indigenous people have developed over thousands of years have worked well for them. They've survived without prisons. I mean, imagine if we can't even think about what it would be like to have a society without prisons.
Mm-hmm.
The Okanagan peoples seem to have survived for 4,000 years, not fighting any wars and not having any level of governance above the village, and yet getting along, trading, intermarrying, and managing their affairs without without ending up at war. Well, that's truly remarkable, and surely we could learn from that if we paid attention.
Yeah. Thanks for coming and sharing this.
Thanks, Stuart. It was a real pleasure. Important issue.